Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist, here on Real Liberty Media. I'd like to invite you to listen to some other shows here on Real Liberty Media. We have Behind the Woodshed, evolutionarily engaging in counter-propaganda tactics and related work with Hal Anthony. We also have It's All Connected with Grimner and Circle. They connect all the dots. The subject doesn't matter. The connections are real and tangible. Also, we have Free Your Mind with Grimner and Moose Girl. You can break from thought constraints on the scope of your vision only by realizing those limits that have been presented to you do not apply to you. They are not real. Those concepts make people feel comfortable by giving them thought boundaries. This is the Free Your Mind show with Moose Girl and Grimner. Sit back and listen and see your way beyond the world as it has been defined. We have A Pondergander with Vinny. To Think and Reason, Raising Expectations Through Thought-Provoking Episodes. If you cannot do great things, do small things in a great way. On Sundays, you can sit back and relax and enjoy some music from Grimner. He broadcasts the Sunday Blues Show live on Sundays from noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. He plays all kinds of blues, from great oldies like Robert Johnson, Howlin' Wolf, and John Lee Hooker to the most modern hard-rocking blues from Joe Bonamassa, Poppy Chubby, and Samantha Fish, and all the stuff between, like Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jack Bach Project, and Gary Moore. He also plays blues music from classic rock bands, the Rolling Stones, ZZ Top, and Cream. And while he's playing the music, we are in the Real Liberty Media chat on irc.freenode.net playing a rousing game of trivia. So come on over and join us every Sunday for some great tunes, fun trivia, and great chat. We also have a show, The Top 10 Countdown. Gary L. and Gigi's Boo play the top 10 songs from years gone by, and they provide some interesting historical facts and trivia about the songs and the era. These are all great shows with great content and inspiring messages. Come spend some time with us. Get to know us, and we will get to know you. Also, if you love what you hear and want to represent, we have Real Liberty Media gear. You will love the artwork and it will inspire conversation. Check out our Amazon.com store and Real Liberty Media goods from our website, reallibertymedia.com. Hello, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist, here on Real Liberty Media. Thank you for joining me here and on this great Memorial Day weekend. Appreciate you guys taking some time out to hang out here. I got some fun stuff to talk about today. At least I always think it's fun. You never know. Hope it's entertaining enough. Take a moment just to thank those people who did give their lives for fighting for freedom for this country, although it's been a long time since we've actually done that. But I appreciate people who served in the uniform services of the United States. So I will think of some of those guys that I served with in the past and always take some time out on Memorial Day weekend to do just that. Hey, there's a great show Grimner and Moose Girl had this week. There was other great shows. You can listen to the shows here live on Real Liberty Media. You can actually, am I having audio problems? No, hopefully not. You can listen to the shows live here on Real Liberty Media, or you can download them. They come in MP3 format also, so you can download them and take them with you. You can always go on the Real Liberty Media site and listen to whatever is playing live. So, if you miss a show, be sure and go catch it. There's, every week, I don't really get the, military industrial complex, that's right. I don't always get to listen to shows live, so I take time every week to kind of go back and listen to the shows whenever I get a chance to. So, take some time out and listen to some of these great shows. You got some really great people here with great ideas, and they're really kind of entertaining to listen to. So check them out live or listen on podcast or MP3, whatever you want to do there. Some updates from the homestead here, the new dog, Dexter. He's awesome. Mini Australian Shepherd. He kind of made the transition really easily, and it's just a great pleasure to have him. Matter of fact, we had to take the Bengal cat I have and our other dog, Quigley, to the vet on Friday. So we took Dexter along anyway, and we've had our vet for about 20 years. So they've gone through a number of different pets with us. And I guess, you know, they're still doing the COVID thing, so you don't get to go into the vet. They come out and take your animals in and then do whatever they're going to do and bring them back to you. But they took Dexter in, and I guess one of the women there was just so moved because he was so cute, she actually broke into tears, which is kind of fun, you know, because they know, you know, they've been with us, the same vet, the same staff there for all this time. And, you know, we put, like I said, in the last 2 years, I think we put three different dogs to sleep and kind of a cat at the beginning of that 2 years. I think we had to put her to sleep. So it's been kind of a busy couple years transitioning through. At one time we had five dogs and two cats. And anyway, that's dwindled down. But that was pretty cool to take Dexter to the vet and kind of start that cycle all over again. Hopefully he has a long, healthy life. And, you know, we take care of him as he takes care of us. The other thing, I just posted a video on Rumble about this RC car rock crawling, and I have enjoyed it so much, I actually ordered up a kit to build, and I did that because I wanted to see how it works. You know, I kind of always interested in the internal functioning of stuff, so that is going really well. That should be done within the week, and I have to do a bunch of painting and stuff, which I haven't done in so long. We'll see how that turns out, but the actual mechanical building of the thing is going really well. And yeah, there is a lot of parts you have to put together. You have to build all the transmission and the front and rear differentials. Anyway, it's pretty interesting project I'm working on, so I'm sure we'll, you know, bring that up again in the future. I wanted to talk a little bit about biological weapons, and the reason I wanted to talk about it is because, you know, there's now discussion about whether the COVID virus, you know, was made in a lab. Now, it may seem as news to, I don't know, some portion of population that, you know, poo-pooed that thought a year ago, you know, and called it conspiracy theory. And if you even mention it on YouTube or Facebook or Twitter, Instagram, you know, you would get banned. They would stop allowing you to post because, you know, that was the narrative at that time. And I was kind of wondering a little bit, like, I kind of wonder, like, I have no interest in going to any other country, to be honest with you. I have a rule, and that is I don't travel anywhere that I can't carry a gun. So my travel destinations are pretty limited. And so definitely I'm not going to any other country, although there's several countries I'm sure I can pick up a gun at. I just have no interest in going to any other country. But I was wondering, like, do all countries have people that, you know, kind of are, well, let's just say question authority, or are free thinkers, like, they don't just take for granted what, you know, the ruling party says. And the reason I was kind of thinking about this is because a year ago, if you talked about the COVID virus as possibly coming from that lab, you were an idiot. Like, you were just a conspiracy theorist, that there was no possible way. And Fauci was, saying, it was highly unlikely it came from this lab, even though that lab is the place where they were studying this very virus for gain-of-function studies. And that very lab was the same lab where three workers got sick in November, and who knows, what happened after that, because that was also kept secret. But all of a sudden, now it's back in the news, and now, it's kind of a whole different narrative that, this could possibly have come from the lab. Really? Really? It could possibly have come from that lab. I'd say it's more than likely that it came from that lab. But I was kind of wondering about, like, biological warfare, because if it came from that lab, then we have to say, then we have to decide, well, was it leaked on purpose, which in that case it would fit into the biological warfare weapons category. And if it was an accident, okay, it was an accident. But, right now, so many people on, there's several different beliefs. I mean, there's people that believe if you take the jab, that you're taking, something that the government is going to use to kill you later. And other people think, well, if you don't take the jab, you're going to be the ones that they kill when they release the, more virulent strain of whatever's coming at us. So I was looking back at biological weapons and how long they've been around, and I actually kind of got off on this tangent thinking, actually, you can kind of define civilization as to define when civilization happens is if you just go back and look at warfare, because basically I don't think you would have necessarily warfare until you have civilization. But as soon as you have civilization, cities or bigger villages or I don't know what you want to call them, we'll call them whatever you want, populations of people that own or maintain some piece of property and resources, there's going to be somebody else who wants to take those things. So I guess I went back to about the 1300s and the Mongols. This is the first kind of actual documented history of biological warfare. And the Mongols used to take corpses that were infected with the, I think, bubonic plague or black plague. I don't know if those are two or the same. I didn't look at it that closely. And they used to hurl those corpses over city walls and stuff. It sounds kind of funny to me now, but anyway, and then they would infect, the populations of whoever they were fighting with or cities they were trying to capture or whatever. And kind of makes you wonder, though. I mean, so to hurl, infected bodies over a wall, and especially back in the 1300s, I'm not so sure that the sanitation practices were so high that the people doing the hurling weren't any less affected than the people being hurled at. But my point was that it seems like, this could be biological warfare. China's on the move right now. They're trying to, I said before in a episode a week ago, maybe even the last 2 weeks, I talked about how China's really trying to take over the world. They're trying to be the center of, they're trying to create a currency or be the country that everybody turns to base their currencies on. Oh yeah, the blankets for the Native Americans, that's true too. Smallpox on the blankets. Anyway, China is trying to take over the world, and they are, you know, I mean, they're attacking different countries in every way possible. They're using electronic means. I mean, if they had to reduce the population of whatever several countries to get them down to the point where they no longer have adequate defenses, I mean, it seems like biological weaponry would be the way to do it. Something else I learned in kind of researching biological warfare is that, you know, pretty much every, I was going to say civilized country, it sounds kind of ugly now, but let's say every first world country continues to study biological warfare weapons, even though, you know, and it doesn't matter that we've signed treaties or agreements in the past that, you know, we wouldn't. Pretty much every single country who's even signed those agreements that we wouldn't use biological warfare still study how we can be more effective with biological warfare. You could say if this was a dry run, I would say it was a pretty damn successful test in many ways. You know, you could see how fast that infection spread and how many people were infected, but also just look at how compliant so much of the population has been. And it's probably, you know, it's kind of almost like that test run to see how is a country going to respond to this kind of an attack. And I betcha, you know, looking at how this country and pretty much every other country in the world has responded to the COVID virus spread is, you know, it's pretty telling. I think if that was done on purpose, they're gathering a lot of data, that's for sure. And it certainly isn't going to... we aren't going to fare well in the next one if that was just a trial run. All right, let's see. I also, this time of year, I mean, it is beautiful here in Oregon. Today, especially, it's going to be 80 degrees. It's sunny. What a great Memorial Day weekend it's going to be. Have an extra day off this weekend, so that's always nice. But I already started hearing about murder hornets. Now, I know on the East Coast, in several states in the East Coast, along the eastern seaboard and, you know, the eastern part of the country, the cicadas are coming. And I'm not sure they've actually come out of the ground yet, but I know everybody's just waiting on pins and needles for the cicadas to come up. So, but here in Oregon, I already started hearing this story that I've heard for a couple years now, and it really bugs the crap out of me, and I'm going to share it with you. Well, probably you've already heard of the Asian hornet or murder hornet. Probably we won't be able to call it the Asian hornet much longer because, of course, that'll be some kind of a hate crime. But, you know, everybody just, it's like full panic mode when they start talking about murder hornets. And the reason is because they say murder hornets can, you know, devastate honeybee hives and the whole, you know, agricultural production of food is going to come to a screeching halt because honeybees are going to disappear. You know, we already had, you know, hive deaths problem for years with honeybees, but, you know, because I studied biology for a long time, I always question these stories when they come up and try and make sense of it with what I know. So I was asking myself some questions that I wanted to answer, and I'm going to kind of share those with you. So I wanted to know, where do murder hornets come from? Have they evolved with bees, you know, in wherever they came from? And why aren't all those bees already gone? And how have the countries where murder hornets have been all this time continued to produce food if their bees are all gone due to murder hornets? And I mean, you just kind of see like the hype behind this. is we have to stop the murder hornet because it's going to devastate the bee population. And, you know, I guess the cold, hard truth of having a background in biology, thanks, Rob. The cold, hard truth of having a background in biology, which, you know, I can't say all of my peers are like this, but, you know, when I was studying biology, it was really kind of, it was really scientific. I mean, you used statistics and studies and research to come to a conclusion. And one thing I took away from that years ago was, because, I mean, back then, 30 years ago, oh my God, it's been a long time since I graduated, 40 years ago, you know, people would always talk about a cornerstone species, you know, that there was one species that, you know, if that species disappears, that's the end of the world. And I thought to myself, as I've said before, 95% of all species that have ever existed are extinct. 95%. So if you think about that 95% in all of the millennia of life on this here planet Earth, somehow it's always missed that cornerstone species. If you believe that. I don't happen to believe that there's a cornerstone species. I absolutely love honeybees. And I love what honeybees do. Honeybees create a food that never spoils. Did you know that about honey? It never spoils. Now, those of us who have kept honey around a little too long know that, you know, it can crystallize. But it never spoils. No matter how long it's around, it never spoils. That's an awesome achievement, is to create a food that never spoils. But as far as being a cornerstone species, I seriously doubt it. And I actually found some interesting results when I went to look at, you know, murder hornets and what has happened in the countries that have had murder hornets for, let's just say, a very long time. So let me just give you I'm going to list the countries that have had murder hornets, I don't know, forever. Russia, Korea, China, Taiwan, Laos, Thailand, Cambodia, Myanmar, Vietnam, Nepal, India, Sri Lanka, more recently, Japan, and yes, North America. So I think it was 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, they found an Asian hornet along the Washington state and Canadian border. And so now, you know, that's why there's hype here on the local news about murder hornets, because, you know, everybody's crazy that we're, you know, we're going to quit producing food, that we're going to, you know, we're not going to, the honeybees are going to disappear and we're not going to have honey and we're not going to be able to grow food, and on the hype goes. Well, it turns out that, as I've always believed, nature adapts to different pressures. The world is awesome. The earth is awesome at adapting to what we may consider catastrophes. I mean, look at Mount St. Helens. I was here May 18th, 1980, when Mount St. Helens erupted. I was actually in Newburgh, Oregon, which isn't that far from Mount St. Helens. And Mount St. Helens still is a beautiful mountain, but it used to be a much larger, beautiful mountain, snow-capped pretty much year-round. And you could see it from Portland. You could see it from Newburgh. You could see it from many parts of Oregon and Washington. I don't know about Idaho, but I mean, it was a big mountain. And man, it blew its top May 18th, 1980. And I remember that. And I remember seeing all the devastation. It blew down thousands of acres of trees, just blew them down like toothpicks lying in a row. The Toodle River was overflowing with volcanic ash. For weeks it took for all of the water to run off. And I forget the lake that was up there. I wasn't really planning on talking about Mount St. Helens and the eruption, but here I go. But anyway, some lake emptied out, you know, and that whole ecosystem was destroyed, like burnt, covered with ash, trees knocked out instantly. And I don't mean like a little bit of trees. I don't mean like clear cutting a section of forest. I'm talking about entire, you know, giant geographical area of trees blown down and covered in ash and mud, and luckily not a lot of lava. But here we are, 40 years later. What was that, 80? So 41 years later. You know, it's beautiful up there. The elk have come back. The deer have come back. The plant life has come back. Comes back in stages, but it comes back. So, you know, and I guess as humans, we might consider that a catastrophe. But I think nature just sees it as an opportunity, another chance for things to evolve, things to adapt, things to change. Some things, you know, became extinct. Some things became stronger. That's the way it is. Well, in the case of the Asian hornet, murder hornet, in some of those countries, as a matter of fact, in Japan, it's really interesting. There's honeybees in Japan which have developed a defense for the murder hornet. So even though like we're in a panic over saving the honeybees here in North America and destroying the murder hornets, which, by the way, I'm in favor of, because I don't know if you've seen them. They are freaking hideous. They're ginormous. You see somebody holding a murder hornet, and the damn thing is, I'm not going to exaggerate. Okay, I'm going to exaggerate. It looks like it's half the size of their hand. Now, I don't know if it's just midgets holding these things when I see pictures of them. They are gigantic freaking hornets. And I honestly do not want to see one. I don't want to see one in Oregon. I don't want to see one ever up close and personal. Maybe if it's captive, I would. But anyway, so these honeybees in Japan have already evolved or developed a defense for the murder hornets. So I'm going to include in my show notes a picture of this. It's called a defensive ball of Japanese honeybees. I'm just going to read you the caption, in which two hornets are engulfed, incapacitated, heated, and eventually killed. This sort of defense is also used against the Asian giant hornet. So here Japan has, you know, been more in more recent times been intruded by Asian hornets, and their bees have already kind of adapted a defensive posture for, you know, eliminating the threat to their hive. Now, I don't know how good it is. I don't know if this is just like the honeybees get two of the hornets and then, you know, 1,000 other hornets come in and wipe out the hive. Anyway, I'm just saying, you know, I guess I wish people would not just get on the, you know, hype bandwagon and actually look at life, how it actually happens in the real world. You know, how it actually happens is you're either one of the 95% that goes extinct, or you adapt and, you know, change your behaviors so that you can survive in whatever environment is now presented to you, whether it be by another enemy that shows up in your area, or the devastation of a volcano or a hurricane or tornado or who knows what. But you either adapt or you disappear. And while I'm on that subject, it always reminds me of the damn California condor. And I know the California condor people, whoever they are, would hate it if they heard this. But don't you think we've spent way too much money trying to save something that was going extinct? And I kind of feel that way about a lot of things that are going extinct. I mean, if you're going extinct, then you didn't adapt to the new environment. Whatever it is, you didn't adapt. And yeah, you'll hear people say, well, it's man's fault. Okay, I don't care. I really don't care. Man is a species too. We should do a good job at, you know, taking care of our natural resources, but not at the detriment of our own. So when we spend, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars saving some things that, you know, just aren't thriving in whatever environment they are in, you know, sometimes we need to just let them go. I mean, you're not going to be able to save everything, no matter how much money you spend. Some things are just not going to survive. You know, and on the other hand, we do a really good job at bringing things back that are adaptable. The American bald eagle, I know, was down to, I forget how many thousand birds, 40, 50 years ago, and now they've grown to about 450,000 mating pairs in North America, in the continental United States, I should say. And even to the point now, I don't know if you've noticed this, but some they're making these kind of bird of prey proof jackets for small dogs and cats, because the eagle population is starting to be responsible for some smaller dogs and cats being taken. And that I would only believe if I saw it too, by the way. But they're saying that it's happening. Maybe it is happening. I don't know. Anyway, so some of those countries may have seen a little bit of challenge to their agricultural production, but if they did, it was very short-lived. All of those countries, as far as I know, not one single one of those countries who have the Asian hornets or have, you know, been invaded by Asian hornets are unable to produce food to support, you know, some part of their population. Although I know the United States does produce a ton of food and provide a lot of food to other countries, I bet that's going to slow down a bit as it becomes harder and harder for us to get food. But anyway, it doesn't seem like it has. At number one, it doesn't seem. And, you know, also you got to remember, honeybees aren't the only thing that pollinates, you know, fruits and vegetables. There's a lot of other critters that do it. Hummingbirds do it. Moths do it. Butterflies do it. You know, there's a lot of critters that help in the pollination of plants on planet Earth. Yeah, honeybees are probably the biggest one. And I guess in a way you could say honeybees are the ones that we have somehow figured out how to sort of domesticate and put them to work for ourselves. But they're not the only, they're not the only gig out there. And like I said, I do love honeybees. I hope they stay around for a long time. But come on, you know, the hype about the Asian hornet is just, like, in my opinion, overblown. All right, moving on. So, you know, I guess I started that whole thing out talking about, you know, other countries and whether or not people kind of question authority. And I remembered, you know, I mean, if you look at a lot of the countries who kind of put up a bit of a fight over wearing masks and social distancing and the whole COVID thing, You know, you got to see a lot of other countries kind of marching in the streets and denying the authorities, you know, not wearing masks and not social distancing. And I like that. I like that people are able to do that. But then again, you have some countries where if you do question authority or disagree openly, or sometimes not even openly, you're either imprisoned or put to death for, you know, not believing and not following the authorities. I was kind of reading about a few, a few episodes ago, I talked about solar, I think I talked about solar panels and electric cars and where some of those products come from, like some of that cobalt is harvested in mines that have no, you know, mining safety protocols. They hire children to mine some of that stuff, and there's no kind of safety standards for children working in mines in some of those countries. And it takes a lot of products to make solar panels and to make electric batteries for your electric car. And when I was kind of researching that, I stumbled upon a bunch of other stuff that China is doing. Why am I on the China kick? Because I don't think a lot of people kind of follow or can get a hold of some of this information. I mean, a lot of people do, I assume. It's just that we don't see it or we don't hear about it. Why we don't hear about it, I don't know. But there is a group of people who lived or live in China, and they're called the Uyghur Muslims. It's not spelled like it sounds. I'm not even going to try and spell it for you unless I have it in front of me here. No. Oh, I do. It's U-Y-G-H-U-R. U-Y-G-H-U-R Muslims. Now, the first time I read something about the Uyghur Muslims, I was like, I don't know. You know, that doesn't seem like it's that important for whatever reason. I kind of blew it off. But the more I ran into the stories about the Uyghur Muslims, the more I kind of wanted to go see if it was true. So I actually got a hold of the actual original report that was done. And this report was done from a institute, let's say, a research committee, bunch of people. It's called the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. And they actually, I'm going to read exactly how they gathered their information. It says, the research report draws on open source Chinese language documents, satellite imagery analysis, academic research, and on-the-ground media reporting. It analyzes the politics and policies behind the new phase of the Chinese government's ongoing repression of Uyghurs and other Muslim minorities. It provides evidence of the exploitation of Uyghur labor and the involvement of foreign and Chinese companies, possibly unknowingly, in human rights abuses. Now, what got my attention when I was reading this, because, I mean, initially it was like, it's China, communist, who cares what they're doing? Hang on, drink time. Okay, ready to go. The reason it became more interesting to me is because of the companies that I saw who are actually using Uyghur Muslim slave labor to produce their products or to assemble their products or to provide a product that they then use to assemble their products. Now, I had to make fun So I'm a dentist. I work in a dental office. And it's kind of funny. I'm the dentist, and I have a Samsung phone. But my assistants, they all like iPhones, right? So after reading this story one day, because you know how it is when you think you own the better whatever it is, and you want to make sure that and you want to make sure that everybody knows you have the better thing. They're not really like that, but they always tell me, like, if something goes wrong with whatever, my watch or my phone or something, they always go, oh, doc, that's because you have a Samsung. And so the other day when somebody said that, I said, hey, I go, yeah, but at least mine isn't made by Uyghur slaves in China. And which is a lie, mine is too. You know, like a lot of stuff we use comes out of these camps. So this is how this happens. Is China, Communist Party, takes these Muslims and Uyghur Muslims, and actually there's a few other religious systems that aren't permitted in China, that they take these people and they put them into, guess what, re-education camps. And then after they've re-educated them enough, they put them in these facilities for manufacturing whatever. And it's kind of funny. So they actually, I think, use some kind of a private corporations to assist in this re-education training. And then, like, so let's say you take 50 Uyghur Muslims, like as a person, I guess slave owner, you take those 50 Uyghur Muslims and you put them in your re-education center and you re-educate them, and then you kind of promise that they will produce a certain amount of whatever, and then you put them in that facility and they produce a certain amount of whatever, and then you get paid for running those slaves through that system and producing whatever it is that they're going to produce. So my quip with my assistants was, you know, haha, well, at least mine isn't made by Uyghur slaves in China. So, and it was, but yeah, so what I'm saying is, yes, Apple is one of those companies. Now, there's 82 companies that the Australian Strategic Policy Institute actually identified as companies that are receiving the benefits of these Uyghur Muslim slaves. But I want to read just a short list to you because you know, whenever you start thinking how righteous you are, like how you live your life and you don't harm anybody and, you know, whatever, man, you got to start looking a little deeper. Not that I'm saying it should make it. I don't care if you choose to make it a difference in your life or not. But I always think it's good to have some kind of education, some kind of knowledge about the products that you're using. I mean, let's say, for example, and this is a really weak example, and I'll explain why at the end. So my new radio control hobby, yeah, I could go on Amazon and order stuff. I could go on hobby shops online and order stuff. But I want to go to the local hobby shop and get to know the guy and put money in his pocket so he can support his family and I can have like an eye to eye with him, you know, on, you know, semi-regular basis. And then when I go in and ask for something, he knows I'm not, you know, he knows I'm somebody. I'm an actual person attached to a body. And, you know, I have a concern and I want him to help me settle it. And they're, you know, they're more helpful. They're more willing to help you out if you spent money in their shop. That's my opinion anyway. And I like supporting local people. I like them to be successful. So here's the list of companies that are using Uyghur Muslims slaves to produce their products. And maybe some of these names I'm not going to do a really good job at saying, but some of them are pretty easy. Okay, here we go. I probably have like 40 on here. Abercrombie and Fitch, Acer, Adidas, Alstom, Amazon, Apple, Asus, BAIC Motor, Bestway, BMW, Bombardier, Bosch, BYD, Calvin Klein, Candy, Carter's, Cerruti 1881, Changan Automobile, Cisco, CRRC, Dell, Electrolux, Fila, Founder Group, GAC Group, Gap, Geely Auto, General Motors, Google, Gore-Tex, H&M, Haier, Hart Schaefer Marks, Hisense, Hitachi, HP, HTC, Huawei, iFlytek, Jack and Jones, Jaguar, Japan Display Inc., L.L. Bean, Lacoste, Land Rover, Lenovo, LG, Li Ning, Mayer Meizu, Mercedes-Benz, MG, Microsoft, Mitsubishi, Mitsumi, Nike, Nintendo, Nokia, Oculus, Oppo, Panasonic, Polo Ralph Lauren, Puma, SAIC Motor, Samsung, SGMW, Sharp, Siemens, Skechers, Sony, TDK, Tommy Hilfiger, Toshiba, Tsingtao Tongfang, Uniqlo, Victoria's Secret, Vivo, Volkswagen, Xiaomi, Zara, Zegna, ZTE. Now, I don't know how many that was, but I bet you recognize some. I know, sounded foreign, didn't it, Beetle? So, just to know, I mean, just take some of the names off of that list, especially lately. Like, this is why I like to have this kind of information. And maybe this is why I just like to know some stuff. Because when I see some of these flipping morons getting up on their high horse or getting on their soapbox and starting to preach to the rest of us about how we aren't doing things right, whether it be voting rights or racism or somebody else's rights or whatever, you can just take this list and match their name to the factory. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to include this report also in my I'm going to include this report in the show notes so that you'll be able to actually go to this very report and see for yourself, because they actually identify which factories in China are producing what and which companies are using products from those facilities to make their own products. And then when you see Microsoft come on and preach to you about how you should be, or have Microsoft get into the, you know, Microsoft and Bill Gates and George Soros were going to be the, I have this old story here, they were going to be the ones who decide what is and isn't fake news on the internet. They were going to be the ones to control what is offensive or not on the internet. Bill Gates, Microsoft, you know, and here they are benefiting from Uyghur slaves in communist China. You know, or Apple coming on and, you know, any of these companies. I mean, I bet there's at least 5-10 of these companies who've came out and preached to us lately about how we should be doing things. And here they are deep in bed with the Chinese Communist Party using slaves. I mean, isn't that kind of what the deal is right now with Black Lives Matter and racism, is that, you know, slavery sucks Yeah, slavery sucks. So why are you still participating in that very act? I mean, if you are going to be righteous and preach to the rest of us, clean up your act. Now, a lot of these companies were contacted by the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, and they were asked if they, you know, well, number one, they were asked if they knew that they were receiving products from these factories that were manned by Uyghur Muslim slaves. Number one, did they know that they were getting that? Number two, were they still doing it? And it's kind of crazy, but a lot of those companies just couldn't find their way to respond. Wonder why. I mean, I'm sure that wouldn't imply that they are. And I mean, a couple of those companies said, now this was just last year in 2020. Actually, the study went from 2019 to 2020. And this is 2021. That's, you know, plenty of time to respond, whether you're using, you know, the products of slaves to, you know, maximize your profits. I guess that's what I'm getting to. And it's plenty of time to have found, you know, another source of labor other than slaves, but you know, it's going to interfere with your bottom dollar. You can't just pull right out of a concentration camp of slaves producing, you know, your L.L. Bean shirts or shoes or, you know, your Samsung phone or TV or whatever. And yeah, it does kind of bum me out. Not, you know, I mean, I do kind of love technology and I kind of hate it. It is totally a love hate thing with me, because especially now, you know, I hate technology because I know that I'm being tracked no matter what. We all are. We're all being recorded, tracked, whatever. And yeah, I mean, some of us don't have any life to be so interesting to for somebody to spend a lot of time tracking us. But the bottom line is they are, and they're going to continue doing it. And you know, if you don't want to play with the technology, you're going to be pretty isolated, which isn't a bad thing. But in order to take advantage of this technology, you're going to constantly be exposed. And anyway, that was pretty interesting. Went kind of a long ways for those couple of stories. I did want to say, I thought this was kind of, you know, my hypocrisy of the last week or two has been how all of a sudden, you know, let's just say whatever party, one party is now calling, you know, damaging buildings violence. When for at least a year, I know here in Portland, I have heard that damaging buildings is not violence. That's why they don't charge anybody in Portland with any crimes when they're destroying those businesses in Portland. And I'll be honest with you, I probably said this before, I don't care about the businesses in Portland. I think they're stupid for setting up business in Portland. Maybe they thought it was cute when they came to Portland, because Portland's so weird and, you know, whatever. I bet they don't think it's so cute now when they have those multi-$1,000 windows shattered and goods hauled out of their stores. But, you know, for at least a year, I've heard that damaging buildings is not violence. But suddenly Israel launches a couple rockets into Palestine and that's violence. All the buildings that are destroyed. It's violence if it happens to, I don't know, some other country. It's not violence when you do it at home. So we probably have that clear now. Oh my God, I had another story I wanted to get to and I'm not going to get to it. Hey, but guess what? So as I said, earlier. You can catch, you know, these shows on Real Liberty Media Live. You can listen to a feed on Real Liberty Media that has programs going pretty much all the time. You can download the shows in MP3 format and listen to them whenever you want. You can listen to them on some different podcast platforms. Grimner does a great job of getting these shows out there. So we are going to do a show on Tuesday night this week. That'll be 9 o'clock Eastern time. That's the Redneck Dentist, Doc Mike here. And we'll be doing it on Real Liberty Media on Tuesday night at 9 p.m. And maybe we're going to do two shows a week. I don't know. It's great that Real Liberty Media has this platform. I think it's fantastic. And really, honestly, take in some of these shows. They're great shows. So this is what I'm going to cover on Tuesday night, just a little bit. I am going to talk about that George Soros and Bill Gates kind of policing the internet thing. And also I'm going to talk about blue light. I don't know if you've heard much about blue light, but I am going to talk a little bit about how blue light is, you know, being used to like hypnotize our kids. And I got to tell you, this is the craziest thing. You know, we have the grandkids over pretty regularly, and they do have to do chores. And after they do chores, they get to kind of do whatever. So luckily, these grandkids are pretty awesome. They spend a bit of time outdoors, even after they're done with their chores. But then, you know, they'll be watching whatever, something on TV, you know, and we watch what, you know, we pay attention to what they're watching. So they watch pretty decent stuff. They're all young, 10 years and under. But it's the craziest thing. I could literally, and you've probably all done this at some point in your life, I could literally walk straight in front of them and ask them what they're watching, and it's like they're staring a hole through you because they're hypnotized. They have no idea you're standing between them and the screen. They don't understand that the signal's been blocked because their brain is frozen. And I'm going to talk about a little bit of research that's been done on that phenomenon. And we're going to do that show at 9 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday. We'll be done before Clyde Lewis starts running. And you can listen to Clyde Lewis right here on Real Liberty Media 2. As far as I know, we're still doing that. That's awesome. And I guess I'm going to finish a minute or two early, but I want to thank you all for joining me today. And I will see you Tuesday. Thanks.